Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
In Pennsylvania, a judge is considering whether to release a video that shows another fatal police shooting, a man shot in the back by a Hummelstown officer who claims self-defense and has been charged with criminal homicide. Our next guest might ask, is that officer and were others in a string of deadly police encounters getting the proper oversight? And Cheryl Dorsey, a retired African-American sergeant with 20 years in the L.A. Police Department, says something has to change. Her 2013 book is Black and Blue, The Creation of a Manifesto. So, Cheryl, for change, start with your fellow police. A tremendously hard job, but you say also tremendous power. You say an angry officer can unlawfully detain you on a Friday and give you a whole weekend in jail if you don't have bail. So talk about that, what you call contempt of cop.
Hi, Robin. Thank you for having me. And so when I refer to the actions of some officers as contempt of cop, what I'm referring to is the great power that police officers have. And what I mean is that when you anger me, and I believe that that's by and large what we're seeing on a national level, I think officers are becoming personally involved when a citizen doesn't do something that they've directed them to do, or they are a little too mouthy, if you will. And so there's a price to pay for that. And I believe that's exactly what we saw in the instance of Eric Garner in Staten Island. The officers told him to turn around and put his hands behind his back. And he was frustrated and tired of what he perceived as harassment, refused to do it. And there was a price to pay.
Well, that price, we'll remind people, was a group of officers piling on him and he choked to death. But I want to hold you up there for a second. We're hearing from young men in primarily Black inner city communities that they are so afraid of the cops that they feel the reaction to a cop is to run away from the police officer. And then you're saying that this is exactly what's exacerbating anger in officers.
Well, certainly, my best advice is to comply. What I would say is what I say to my own sons, and I have four of them, and so I say comply. I say be polite. I say be a good witness for yourself. You don't have to telegraph to an officer that you may lodge a personnel complaint against him. You can see his name on his shirt. You can see his badge number. But even when we see compliance, we still see incidents of what I believe is excessive force. What I believe is punishment.
Well, you say to your former fellow police officers, how is it that somebody running suddenly led to deadly force? As a police officer, you need to know you're going to run.
Right. Well, what I say is that we have two options as an officer, right? If someone runs from you, I mean, that's inherent to police work. We don't expect everyone to do what we say. We expect people to be dishonest because they don't want to go back to jail. And so I get that. And so if someone runs from me, I don't take it personal. I've got two choices. I can either get some exercise and go after you, or I can let you go. Because after all, you live in this area, I work in this area, and I will see you again. So what is the urgency? Officers are taught to escalate and de-escalate force. And we're only seeing an escalation. We're not seeing them catch a person and then de-escalate that force. We're seeing them catch a person, escalate that force to a deadly force incident.
Well, look, we recently were reminded how hard a police officer's job is. An officer in New York, Brian Moore, sees a man adjusting his waistband. Officer Moore thinks that might be a gun. It is. And the man shoots and kills him. Benjamin Dean and LaCorey Tate killed after Dean stops a car in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. You never know when that person who is maybe just a kid who's not complying may also be a person with a gun.
We understand that it's a dangerous job, and that's inherent to the police work.
So what are you saying, Cheryl Dorsey? Because you're obviously saying that you feel that some officers are too quickly going from having a suspicion about someone to deadly force. And yet, as you just said, you have to be prepared for deadly force. So how does this get fixed?
You know, some of it is common sense. You can't teach common sense. You can't read that in a manual. And so understand that everyone who is a police officer may not be well suited for that position. And so when we identify those people, when we see those red flags as administrators, then we need to either pull that person to the side and provide them some additional training or get them out of the field altogether, help them find a new occupation. Because unless you are in the immediate defense of your life or the life of another, you don't get to take a life. You don't get to shoot somebody because they won't come here. You don't get to shoot somebody because they made eye contact with you and ran. You don't get to shoot somebody because they won't turn around and be handcuffed.
Well, do you think there are that many instances of administrators, management, that know that there's a police officer that doesn't have the right stuff who's out on the beat?
Well, I can't speak to statistics, but what we do know is that when we hear of instances where someone has used excessive force or deadly force, we find out all too often that this is not the first time, much like Michael Schlager in North Charleston, South Carolina. This was not the first time that he tased someone unnecessarily. This was actually the third time when he encountered Walter Scott, which ultimately led in a deadly force incident. When we finally hear of something errant happening, it's generally not the first time. Officers don't start off killing people. It starts off small.
I think it was you I might have heard say that maybe not everyone is qualified to be a police officer, an extraordinarily difficult job. But there should be more counseling and re-education for officers as they go along.
Certainly, I think that there is a lack of psychological evaluation, re-evaluation. I mean, we understand that police officers are evaluated psychologically to enter the department, but then after that, there's no revisit. And I think just based on what police officers are exposed to on a daily basis, it just makes sense to me. Why not have officers intermittently go through a psychological re-evaluation to make sure that they haven't become jaded or tainted by the things that they're exposed to? And if you see red flags, address it.
Meanwhile, other departments, Oakland comes to mind, are changing their techniques. You're a retired sergeant. What's the one thing you'd want to tell officers about why this would be good for them?
Well, what I would just say to the officers that are doing the right thing is continue to do your job as you've been doing and change nothing. And what I would also say to supervisors is that they need to be, I think, a little more diligent in the discharge of their duties, because understand that most of what happens in terms of an illegal arrest or an excessive use of force does not happen without involvement of at least a patrol sergeant. So I think if supervisors on a field level were more involved in the day-to-day activities of the officers, maybe some of this can be nipped in the bud.
That's Cheryl Dorsey, retired LAPD sergeant. Sergeant Dorsey, Cheryl, thanks very much.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate it.